Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So we spoke about the cost of living and, of course, the ongoing pressures we see in South Africa. But, of course, food and food security and food availability remains critical. There's an interesting story that we're about to touch base on now, and it actually speaks to our political and economic relationship with our peers. South Africa forms part of the Southern African Customs Union, essentially a bloc that encourages free trade and economic integration amongst our peers and partners, allowing for us to sell, move, and of course, interact in terms of trade of goods and services within this region. Whilst we have a very successful and lovely relationship, much of which that South Africa has benefited from, key economies like Botswana and Namibia are prioritizing the localization of their own agricultural sector, and as a result have said, hold on, South Africa, we're going to keep a ban in place to not import or welcome your fresh produce to our region. It's a lot that's at stake here. And of course, that speaks to the intricacies involved when it comes to trade, economics, and even managing the politics of it all. To tell us more, we're joined by agricultural economist Thabile Nkunjana to help us unpack this conversation further. Thabile, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Trigu. I hope you can hear me now.
We can hear you loud and clear. Apologies about that. The gremlins, yeah, they've been playing with us in the system today. But one thing that isn't playing is trade, economics, and politics. There's a clear intersection between all three. And maybe we do just need to contextualize trading bloc through the Southern African Customs Union. Let's start there just to understand its role and its function. And of course, how, through policy and regulation, there are means and ways within which countries are allowed to restrict certain trade of products and services for valid reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, SACU, in short, that's the bloc, the first year SACU, has been existing since like 1910. You know, that tells you, it's one of the oldest in the world, you know, the blocs that have been available, you know, to eight countries. At least this time around, it's South Africa, Eswatini, it's Lesotho, Namibia, and Botswana, those five countries. They are the ones that make the SACU block, sorry. So since then, there have been, you know, quite a number of, you know, agreements that these countries, mainly the SACU itself is an agreement that, you know, it aligns the roles and the terms of the how countries should go about to trade with one another. It has been practically a kind of a free kind of an arrangement that has been happening over the years. And of course, because of the growth within these economies, a lot of investment has been made, be it in the form of farming itself, logistics between the countries, and, you know, the retailers that are also involved in it. Because remember, there are a lot of countries, a lot of retailers that are in South Africa that operate in all of these countries. When you go to Botswana, you will find all the retailers in South Africa. When you go to Eswatini, you will find them. So it is basically, it has become like a one big household that is operating quite very well. And of course, the benefits have been skewed based on the sizes of the countries and the market. South Africa is quite huge when compared to these countries, but that does not mean that these countries have not been benefiting. If it's anything, there's been a lot of benefits even for them as well, but it appears that it is growing, you know, kind of sideways in recent times.
And that's the thing, it has been growing perhaps sideways, and I fully understand and agree with these economies that they should invest and develop their local economies. It actually might benefit the region overall, as long as we're finding opportunities to actually trade creatively and competitively. Let's talk about this ban, because this was actually implemented in December of 2021, where Botswana and Namibia used regulations to close their borders to South African vegetables. Yeah. Help us understand what the reasoning was back then and why it's been reinstated now.
So before that, before the December announcement, which is in fact, it became in fact as of early, it didn't show the 2 years specifically that was specific from Botswana. So before that, these countries, they would have these theoretically closures, you know, opening the border for closure. And this is something that trade across the world countries do. For instance, if you are to look in the European Union, there are a lot of countries that, you know, for instance, Spain dominate a lot of other, you know, vegetable production and other, a country like, for instance, Ukraine. Mm-hmm. These countries, they get ready, they're going to get paid for a different period to others. So the others, when they have shortage, at the second period, they'll be importing from these other countries. And this is somehow kind of an arrangement that was working before the extensive, kind of trade, particularly with Botswana, because Namibia still does communicate, they send out communication in terms of for this period, from this time to there, we're going to have more clothes because our products, because we have our products ready for the market. So this has been going on since then. Then now, the recent arrangement of this, what they are talking about is that they want to develop their local, industry. And this is something that also the SACU agreement, caters for. It allows that, for countries to be able to do. But the issue that South Africa as a country that is trading as well and also invested in immensely in those markets is that the issue should be a proper communication. That is when the country, and also because there is another thing that is quite important, that is competition.
Mm-hmm.
Competition creates greater value for all those that are involved. If I may make an example specifically with the two countries, Botswana and Namibia and South Africa. South Africa, a few years ago, was a net importer of beef, meaning we needed to buy beef outside the country in order to be able to sustain our local supply consumption. Mm-hmm. And we were importing from these countries until we became a net exporter, meaning now we are producing more than we need. That's why we are selling, we are reconciling agreements to Saudi Arabia, other countries, we are selling our beef, but we never stopped to import the beef that we were buying whilst we were trying to build our local industry. So that is happening greatly. So this is a kind of a thing that we also would like to see it happen, because it helps the producers to get competitive, to understand businesses better. The same thing it applies. So I think I've produced a lot of sugar, but we are buying a lot of sugar from a certain product that we have, but because of the trading arrangement that we have, we want to make sure that within the block, nobody is left alone in terms of developing the needs, local farmers, the community of the local industry, and so forth.
Someone might say, well, why doesn't President Masisi see it that way and try to boost his agricultural economy by also still keeping imports from South Africa going?
Yeah, this is not a straightforward kind of a situation, I must say. It's not straightforward because, there's also an issue of the farmers themselves. South Africa, even when you are looking into the agricultural code, when they talk of South Africa, they tend to talk in terms of it being way advanced when you compare to a number of these countries, be it farmers, because we are very highly commercialized, mechanized, sector. So perhaps that would be an issue for some people in terms of saying, look, we cannot compete with those farmers that are in South Africa because of ABS. But the issue is that South Africa doesn't even subsidize farmers. So these guys, they push themselves. Just a matter of developing, locally, ways of understanding what the problem should be upon. Because seemingly, currently there is a problem, that we are seeing that is developing and it's actually getting intense. And it's something that we will not like, because it talks to the entire block, security and cooperation. You cannot run away from your neighbor. If there's one thing that you're going to always need, your neighbor. That's why we are advocating, for a good relationship that has existed for over, 100 years now.
I think this is so important, because what I am understanding is the politics behind it, the economics, the intersection that this takes place, and of course understanding how sustainable competitive trade can be maintained. And that's a fine line to balance, right? And you've been commenting to many of our peers that this does need to be managed with the sensitivities involved. Are we finding sometimes the politics might muddy the waters?
No, politics, as much as myself, I'm not a political analyst and everything, and so in terms of commenting around those lines, it's not necessarily within my space. But what I would say is, for instance, beginning of this year, a couple of analysts were saying that, there is going to be some of the statements and the policy developments, because a lot of countries are going for the polls, that is for voting. And when such happens, a lot of policies that not necessarily friendly in terms of things going smoothly as they were going previously. You have seen the trade wars between the United States of America and China.
Yeah.
You have seen it in parts of some Asian countries. You have seen it between China and and Australia, you know. So these are some of the things that when it gets to the political level of things, you know, it might be viewed in a different kind of be used, you know, for whatever that is. But at least for my you know, for my end, it's not something that I would like to sort of get into. But it possibly can have, you know, a tone of around that, but which is something that we would like not to see. I mean, if there's one thing that we should make sure, in all means, we keep, you know, the blog going as it is for the forefathers that who have been operating on it before us, and would like to leave it for the greater generation to come.
I love how diplomatic you are, Thabile. You are as diplomatic as I am. I'm not a sledgehammer. I also like approaching things very meticulously because I don't like leaving any damage when I'm done, right? It's let's solve for the problem and not leave any damage behind, because the intention is clear. We want to keep the trade going. We want to keep the competitive analysis going. But most importantly, encourage trade for the greater good of the region. And I do understand there might be a sense of frustration that South Africa, as the big brother of the region, has really benefited in terms of the lion's share. But are there ways within which we can actually look at what kind of produce we can actually trade competitively? Yeah. Because that also seems as though essentially we all need to be playing towards our strengths. And markets like Namibia and Botswana, typically made up of very arid and dry land, not much agricultural space. More so, they don't necessarily have all the necessary capacity in terms of finance, skills as well. Your thoughts on that one?
You are correct, Google, in terms of, you know, their natural resources themselves, they determine. For instance, I can compare South Africa, the beef industry from South Africa to Botswana. Botswana is very efficient when it comes to production. Actually, they produce one of the top best beef in the world. You know, they compete with the best countries. And of course, even South Africa, when we are busy developing, our locally beef industry is the kind of that we've been looking at closely. So some of these are some of the benefits that these trades that we want to make sure we keep it going have benefited, not only South Africa. Because a lot of people, when they view this entire thing, they look at it as South Africa is a beneficiary, but also recently, as announced by CSSA, it is providing a market for this country. For instance, if I can put a specific number for each country, for instance, Botswana itself, in 2023, about 81% of their products in value, they were exported to South Africa, meaning that a whole lot of chunk of it. And then for Lesotho, about 95% of their products were exported to South Africa. And then in Namibia, about 41, and then starting around 61 somewhere there. So it tells you that as much as we are exporting to them, we are also a market with them, which is something that has always been, you know, a positive for both of the coexistence, you know, between all the countries. This is something that, you know, we are worried about, because some people, they view it, you know, with a narrow eye in terms of understanding what has been, you know, the benefits and the trade-off between the two. And then you are talking about industry, but the commodities that we are competing. I mean, South Africa, we have quite relatively, when you talk about vegetables, almost all of them, they are under issue system. So it meaning for countries that do not necessarily have those highly sophisticated kind of irrigation systems, they cannot necessarily be able to, you know, be as efficient as South Africa. And also remember, South Africa, like I said earlier on, quite developed in agriculture sector. So those are some of the things that, you know, we need to put into perspective when we, you know, when we talk about this issue. But of course, as I said earlier on, that should that be a problem for our neighbors, then that's something that they should brought up, and they should brought forward quite, you know, clearly. That look, guys, for A, B, and C, we look like we see in terms of our competition being kind of distorted by A, B, and C, and then you can take it from there. It's not like South Africa only said, you know, all we want from you guys is for you to depend on South Africa. That's not the case. South Africa exports all over the world. If there's anything, these countries, at least for the overall sectors, agricultural trade, they constitute around 6, 5, 3, and 3. So, meaning a lot of our products are scattered across the world. So, that's why we are saying, look, this is not something that you should be viewed very narrowly. But we need to understand, you know, all the kind of problems that might have been there, because it appears that there are issues, but those issues should be brought forward and discussed as neighbors should.
Tabile, this sounds like a great case study for us to fully evaluate how the implementation, the full implementation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area Act will work.
Yeah.
Because these kind of debates will certainly happen, not only in regions, but right across the continent, where we do find economies actually competing for the same commodities.
Absolutely. And you know, and given that there's kind of a rise in these trade distortions now or barriers, it also brings a bit of a questioning to that African trade. You know, we are talking about, we want to see the whole continent getting to, you know, getting to be involved in this. But of course, the reality is that there are some players, countries like South Africa, that have been doing this for a long time. Therefore, there are countries that are still trying to get their foot. But I can say that the two countries, or at least our neighbors, they have quite advanced in exporting. As I was telling you about the beef that Botswana, you know, produces, they are quite good at that. They are very much understanding the issue of the world. But as far as the African trade area is concerned, we also need to understand, you know, the what also from it, the Afro vision that is for a certain country that feels like we want to develop, you know, our vegetable or maybe a potato industry. We should not import products or potatoes from Egypt. That's an example. You know, so there's a provision for that. But again, as it is the case here in the SACO block, that's something that countries need just, you know, clearly talk about. Not even the world trade, there's provision for when there's a kind of an issue, you know, that countries have, they can easily, you know, put, you know, then the country can do some investigation and see if it is indeed a matter of the unfairness that is going on, or is just that country being, you know, because as we said earlier on, there's a thin line between politics and the trade. So, you know, some relationships are going to be kind of affected a little bit, but that's something that we'd like to not to see, especially for the Africa trade, because there's so much anticipation around it. It is one of the biggest, you know, trade agreements that are out there, and it provides quite a lot of opportunities for a lot of countries, smaller or bigger in the continent.
100%. It's going to be such an intriguing turnaround to see how this does work out. And of course, the kind of progress that we will be able to witness as well in terms of the conversations that take place. You and I should be there. Just to keep the peace and help everyone focus on the main thing. Hey, the diplomacy must be maintained.
No. Absolutely. We are not fighting.
Yeah.
We should never be fighting. There's nothing that has been solved by fighting. I mean, the world will treat the past. There are ways of doing things in a manner that's not going to harm anyone, especially economically. We understand times are tough, so we don't want to see any country kind of suffering because of one another.
100%. Such a pleasure speaking to you. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I hope for many of us as South Africans, it also gives us better insight. You've educated us that Botswana really has done incredibly well in terms of its beef exports, quality, and of course, generation of the value chain. There's a lot more opportunities to advance in the fresh produce space, but finding amicable ways of trading effectively as peers. Thank you again for your time, Tabile.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's Tabile Nkunjana, who joins us as an agricultural economist, helping us contextualize what it is that we see. Seems like there's beef between Namibia, Botswana and South Africa, all to do with vegetables. Pun intended. But essentially, as we've heard, these are two countries, yes, that want to develop internally. You do need to be mindful of the environment that they're actually in, the economies of scale, the value chain, but also understanding that having a positive trading relationship with your peers in the country does play a role of importance. Even those figures that Tabile shared with us, that South Africa actually received at least 81% of imports from Botswana. Again, also seeing Lesotho exporting more than 90% of its products to South Africa. It gives you some context, right? And it also helps you understand the lay of the land. Because Botswana and Lesotho are also landlocked, they don't necessarily have easy access to ports to move their goods to other places, unlike Namibia and Mozambique, who have access to the ocean's economy. So it also does show you the level of reliance that we have within the landlocked regions and countries, and actually trading effectively between each other.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.